This is Joe Stein, and you're listening to Thoughts from Lane Ford Podcast. Welcome, Dr. Tommy John, to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
Can you tell us a little bit about your story?
Yeah, man. So a lot of years, a lot of stuff going on. All right. The one thing I'm not good at is brevity. So I'll try to keep it as short as I can. Multiple sport athlete all the way through my childhood and to high school. Played everything. If there wasn't seasons, I would have played it all. Like I would have played tennis. I would have played golf. I would have played basketball. I would have played football. I would have played it all. But basketball, baseball were my sports. I specialized my senior year of high school. So my senior year was the only year that I went to one sport. And it was that year I knew I was going to play next level. And I just wanted to devote a little more work, a little more time to get myself prepared for what I wanted was Division I level. And so I took the fall and winter off and I worked on myself and my body and preparing myself and the foundation, everything else. Came out and I was the Gatorade State Player of the Year of the state of Minnesota in 1996 as a middle infielder and pitcher. Then I accepted a scholarship to Furman University in Greenville, South Carolina. And the reason I chose them to play baseball was they were going to let me play middle infield and pitch. And that was unheard of because the University of Minnesota wanted me only as an infielder. South Carolina wanted me only as a pitcher. Indiana State wanted to redshirt me. Like all these bigger schools, bigger programs, but they weren't going to let me try to develop and be. I was 155 pounds and 5'11", nothing. So I knew I was going to get bigger, stronger, and basically become a man. And I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I wanted to keep my options open. And Furman allowed me to do that. And so I came in and played my freshman year and did very well. And I got invited to the Cape Cod League. And if you know that, if anybody knows baseball, it's the best players in the nation at the amateur level. And that was a dream of mine. So I had worked my tail off and it had come back to me. And I was being respected in the field of baseball at the next level. So I was really excited about that. Well, I had a little bit of shoulder achiness at this time. And just to be proactive, because you're supposed to be proactive and you go to doctors when things are wrong with you, I go in and they do an MRI and they inject dye into my shoulder socket and the dye got infected. So a doctor-induced infection, I had to go back into the hospital to get my life saved by antibiotics and a flushing and a surgery. So it's very interesting, the two sides of the fence. One, the hospital created a scenario that caused my shoulder to get infected and eat away my capsule. Two, that same hospital saved my life from a mistake that they had made. So I got to experience the curse and the benefits of what allopathic medicine can bring. But with this infection, I was on IV antibiotics for a month. Rehab was grueling. And I got to see what the rehab process was like and like what the body does when it heals. And I was fascinated by it. And I got into tearing apart why injuries occur, why things happen. And then I ended up playing three more years at Furman, pitched professionally for 2 years. And then it just wasn't fun anymore. And then I got hired by a place called Synergy Fitness and Sports, where I was hired as a personal trainer, a performance coach, a rehab specialist. And then I also did private baseball lessons. So my day consisted of 5 a.m. to 12 p.m. Personal training clients, 12 to 3 break, lunch, nap, 3 to 9 or midnight, or sometimes 2 a.m. in hot times. I would do performance training, rehab, NBA, NFL, MLB, college, high school. It didn't matter. It was sports training. It was me and Vladimir Chagoose, and we were running the show. And then I would do private baseball lessons. And I did this for about 10 years. And then I just wasn't enough for me. And I realized I wasn't high enough on the food chain to be able to affect the human athlete in a way that was going to make profound changes in their lives, not for their sports, but on down the road. So I went back to chiropractic school at 32 years old, shut down my business, put my house up for rent. And I went back to school and started from scratch with everything and added a huge tool to my tool belt, which is the nervous system. And I graduated in 2014, and I've parlayed it into the Dr. Tommy John Performance and Healing Center, where you come in, I assess your nervous system first, and then we move, we meditate, we breathe, we nourish, we recover. It's just a performance and healing center for all human athletes, regardless of whether you're 78, just trying to enjoy a round of golf, or you're trying to handle emotional stresses of what being divorced is all about, or trying to handle, you know, put yourself in the best position to be able to survive an infection or a virus, or be able to try to make a pro team or a college team, or just trying to enjoy sports as a general in whole. So I'm down in San Diego. That's what I've been doing. And this is my experience for the last 20 years has brought me to this point right now. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah. Could you say kind of why you're against the system a little bit with healthcare?
Yeah. So what it's turned into is it's a consumer-based business. We don't, we create customers. We're not about cures. We're not about health. We're just about repeat business and customers. And that's, it's called the allopathic model, where we treat people like linear, like lines. It's a linear mechanistic approach, where it's almost like if you picture A to B to C to D to E in one straight line. The way the current medical model and the way they're trained in schools and the way their books are published, even, they look at people that if somebody comes in with a problem with letter B, they'll medicate, drug, surgery, B. If they have to cut out B, they put in a new B. But they don't look at like how A and C and D and E are affecting, because they think of it as a line. Where what the reality of it is, it's a quantum model, it's dynamic, it's holistic, where A, B, C, D, E are in a circle. And A is affected by D, is affected by E, and B, and all of them are all linked, where all systems are connected. Endocrine, musculoskeletal, respiratory, circulatory, immune, nervous, psycho. Like all these things go into our expression of ourselves. And the medical model does not look at us that way. They don't look at us as self-healing. They look at us as something that they fix because they're going to save us. So all they do is, if you have a symptom like vomiting, a runny nose, a fever, they look at it and call you sick. But a fever is something the body does to heal itself. Vomiting is something the body does to make sure it doesn't digest bacteria and get into the small intestine, it gets in the bloodstream, it kills you. Swelling is what cells do when they're damaged, how they heal and bring in new tissue. But the way the medical model looks at the human, it's a very unlucky, you're sick, you're unlucky, and you need us to go in and basically get you to feel nothing by writing a prescription or injecting you or creating a surgery. And we've done this for so long that now it's billions of dollars in the industry, pharmaceutical industry. We've got degenerative children with degenerative diseases now. Like, it's, we're not doing well. And so There's a lot of curtains we could pull back, and we can get into like a 3-hour podcast on this, but I'm just out to be a voice of truth. You know, when I say, not so much bash the other side, but it's just like, here's you coming in, here's what you're expressing, here's what you're feeling. What makes more sense, that you're this unlucky person who has this genetic flaw and there's no way that you can fix it, or that there's a string of events, there's an environment that you put your body in, there's things that you can do to change your lifestyle that have such a profound effect that you can actually change and heal and become a completely different person? Which one makes sense? And they'll end up saying, well, yeah, that one makes sense. And I always say, go with the one that makes sense and you believe in, and they make the decision for themselves, but it's almost like they have to bottom out to get there. And that's the scary part. I try to get them before they have to bottom out.
Vaccines and medication also have a lot of negatives, don't they?
Yeah, and that's what I wish. You know, I'm anti-vax, I'm anti-medication, unless, like, medications, if you and I were in a car accident and our bones are sticking out of our bodies, I'm so grateful for the way the medical system's set up. Let's go in, there's an emergency situation, they set the bone, they suture us up, they clean it. It's a clean, sterile environment. They maybe give us some antibiotics just to make sure we don't have a threatening infection because our skin was broken and there's like bacteria that got in there. That's where we thrive. But we're using that emergency model to apply for degenerative conditions just by people making poor lifestyle choices, and there's no fixing it. So here's the thing. What I would love is And I've had clients come in, they'd be on 4 medications. And I'm like, has anybody talked to you about the side effects of those drugs? No, and nobody. Not even the doctor prescribing them? No. And all you got to do is go to drugs.com and you can look up any drug ever created. And you go to side effects of that drug. It'll literally be like 10 to 12 pages of side effects. So I'll print them off sometimes and we'll give them to them. Where if we were made aware, okay, hey, sir, you have a heart condition. You have a hole in the wall of your heart. It's a congenital anomaly. Here's what we believe you need to do this. You need to take these 4 medications. But with these 4 medications come these possible side effects. And these side effects are irritability, seizures, coma, death, ocular seizure, impotence, digestion problems, weight gain. I mean, just list them. If you wish to take these, this is my what possibly happened. Just informed consent. And then the person's like, okay, I'm going to take these, but there's a chance that these things might happen. So I'm going to go ahead and do these other things to get healthy to make sure these drugs don't hurt me. Or vaccines. Hey, you're about to be injected with, here's the ingredients list. And you list it: aluminum, mercury, formaldehyde, aborted fetal cells, monkey tissue, cow tissue. I mean, if you got into all the ingredients and then all of a sudden you just say, there's a chance that your child may have encephalitis, they may have allergies, asthma, they may have developmental delays, they may have seizures, strokes, they may die with SIDS. I just want to let you know the risks that come with this. And by the way, the risks that come with this might be greater than the disease we're saying that we're going to fix with this. And then let the parent make the decision. Problem is, those doctors don't know what those side effects are. No doctors know what's in vaccines. The doctors giving them don't even know the inserts. They haven't read the labels. They don't know because the way the pharmaceutical companies have set it up. So it's unfortunate because they're putting it on the doctors to take it on themselves. And then if a parent goes, hey, I've read the ingredients, I've read the side effects, I'd like to opt out for something else. Do you have anything else? They're bullied. It's the way they're spoken to by these medical professionals or the nurses. They're bullied into thinking that if they don't make that decision, they're doing society a disservice. There's something wrong with them. And that's where I feel it's unfortunate, because it should be a choice. We should have medical freedom.
Yeah, it doesn't really make much sense to wait around for a vaccine to save us from the coronavirus. I mean, it'd be better just to get outside and that type of thing.
Yeah, especially, man, with what we know about the coronavirus, like with what they've said, and they had to pad death stats. Like, they had to tell doctors from the top to assume that deaths caused by life are caused by corona. So all the numbers that we see are completely manufactured. The tests are dirty, like a goat and a piece of fruit tested positive for corona. So literally, like, what do the tests mean? So when we see these numbers, like, oh, these numbers are exploding. First of all, the tests don't make any sense. Secondly, the doctors were coached. The hospitals got paid more if they said that they had cases or people died from it. So we don't know the numbers, but then to have a vaccine come down that we're going to say is going to save us from something that's not really that dangerous in the first place, meaning it's not any dangerous, it's less dangerous than the flus of the previous like 20 years. And so we weren't like freaking out about vaccines then, but there's something more going on, and I wish people would just dig a little deeper is all I'm saying.
Yeah, some people are motivated to use this for other behind reasons, and it's kind of a little bit dirty.
I agree.
How have humans devolved?
Yeah, man. So I've been doing this for 20 years, meaning I've been very aware for 20 years. I've been observant. I've worked intimately with people of all ages on all sides of the spectrum, from MS to ALS to Parkinson's to developmental disorders in youth. Like, I've seen them all. Over 20 years, we've become more malnourished, overfed, and those two are a paradox, meaning overfed, we're consuming more stuff, but we're not nourished because there's nothing in that stuff. It's like processed crap, really. We're overstimulated by phones, technology, news, just input. We're less aware. We have no awareness of our surroundings or self. We're underslept. Nobody respects sleep anymore. We don't go outside. Our connection with each other we don't have these physical parameters that were like physical competencies as a minimum. We score so poorly on so many levels of that. You've seen my eight essentials I've been posting a lot of. Belief in something greater than yourself, purpose, relationships, sleep, breath, prayer, meditation, natural light exposure, nourishment, movement. We score very lowly in those areas as a nation, and we're getting worse. But there's a lot of people that are saying we are evolving so rapidly. How so? Because of these breakthroughs in technology, you know, and that's where everybody wants to talk about the breakthroughs in technology. But with these breakthroughs, and these conveniences and these luxuries, you're taking away from the human. The human adapts and grows through struggle. That's how nature set it up, so that we get better, is through the struggle. We've got so many things now that don't let us struggle anymore. They basically pave the path for the human instead of preparing the human for the path, that we've devolved rapidly over the last 20 years. And I'd say, you know, and everyone's like, I can run a business from my phone now. I know, but now you're behind your phone nonstop 24/7. You can't, you know, crawl. You can't hang from a bar. You can't stand outside. Your skin hasn't seen the sun. You don't know what nourishment is. You have these food companies making your food for you. Your relationships and your spouse and your partner is just awful. You don't really know what your purpose is. You're fulfilling a higher obligation. You don't really know what to believe. You haven't slept in. So we're just, sadly, we're not doing well. And disease numbers show that, cancer's numbers show that, happiness shows that. But we keep patting ourselves on the back because our economy is really high and because, you know, people have jobs, and that's fine. That's one aspect to it. But it's like where our priorities lie are very skewed.
Yeah. And everyone, I'm kind of going to get into feet here, but everyone wears shoes. So that's kind of another way we devolve. So I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about the feet and why they're so important. And
yeah, man. So feet are that we start off with no arches. A baby's feet is flat, and then they start stimulating it. And you'll see a baby stomping in puddles. And you'll see a kid stomping. They're challenging that foot, challenging the foot. And then the body all of a sudden creates an arch. Well, now we have pediatricians not knowing much. They'll tell parents to put their kids in shoes right away. And then there's a cushion. Well, if there's a cushion, the brain's good that if it's not being stimulated, it's not going to keep that area alive. It's going to focus on other things. So the feet of the kids and youth and adults now are so shut down because of the technology of the shoe system that the more we can get in bare feet, there's also sensory receptors. There's like 4,000 to 5,000 nerve endings to develop brain centers that if we can kind of stimulate that, we're not stimulating that at all. And that's become something that I've seen over the evolution of the people in my office. The problems with the foot, ankles, and calves weren't there. And we would see neurological training stuff. Like 13 years ago, they weren't there. And now it's like everybody coming in, feet, ankles, and calves gone, which means the hips are gone, which means the opposite shoulders are gone. And like that problem, let alone the development stimulus that comes from you toeing the ground, towing grass, towing gravel, towing sand, getting in streams and mud, especially highly, highly necessary with youth and kids. They got to be getting outside and doing that. And that's another area we've devolved in big time. But the shoe industry is making a lot of money. So as long as that's going on.
Yeah. And then the feet are actually related to the hands. So that's one reason why we should hang from a bar every day, right?
Yeah. So that's, same kind of nerve endings, like the feet and the hands, forearms and calves, biceps, hamstrings, glutes and shoulders, like they're very, very parallel together. So not only do we want to stimulate by walking barefoot, but I have a whole podcast where it's why we want to hang from a bar 5 to 7 minutes a day, total 5 to 7 minutes a day. And it's more about the emotional, intellectual component than it is the physical. You're stimulating huge areas of brain by stimulating your hands. Plus, it's the only exercise hanging from a bar that you can't compensate and make easy. So the brain panics way, way, way earlier. So you end up facing some major demons emotionally when you hang from a bar for as long as possible. And so I just had a woman on Instagram. She's given me the green light to talk about her, battling bipolar, whatever she was labeled with. And she's trying to get out from under that label that psychiatry has done. She's getting off her medications because they realize they create more harm than good in psychiatry. So she's coming to terms with this. Well, she's been doing a minute 30 hang for a while now from the book, from my book. And then all of a sudden she knocked out 3 minutes. And I was like, oh my God, the 3 minute club is just like crazy. And this woman's like a mid 40s, mother of two or three, just a badass. But she all of a sudden got three, and she realized it was one, she was having a day that was being triggered. She was having these episodes. She wasn't doing well. It was almost like her therapist was the bar. And she hung and went and faced herself and PR'd. She hung for 3 minutes, which is now the psychological component to that. She has this level of self-esteem. She has this ability. It's almost like a firewalk. When she goes into another scenario or she has another time where we have these ups and downs in life, and we feel these emotions that are very, very powerful, she can now face it. And her level of stimulus that it takes to break that, to break her down, she just raised it. So anything else interpreted now will be below that. She just leveled up her entire life just by hanging from a bar. And so I'm a big advocate of it. Here's a cool thing to know that we're supposed to hang from a bar. A baby has the ability to hang its body weight seconds after being born. So that's pretty cool to know that if we were born with this ability to be able to crawl up mom or be able to hang to feed and nurse, then we should be able to hang from a bar. It's something very primitive, very natural that we should be doing daily for sure.
That's kind of related to isometrics too, isn't it? There's some emotional benefits to that as well as physical. But I heard you say one time that you jumped out in front of a bar because you felt really confident in yourself after doing those all the time.
Yeah, they are. That's why I love to go with them. Besides the corrective nature of them, the neurological input, you can't win them. Like, there's no winning. You're basically battling yourself. And so you creating the intention is creating the stimulus. You're creating this thing that's basically fighting you and knocking you down and damaging you. And your body has this battle. Well, when you face yourself in that arena, you end up just conquering so many different things that even if you didn't believe in them from a physical standpoint, neurological patterning, coding, and all this other stuff, rehab, you just believed in training however you want to train, but you did ISOs just from a standpoint of connecting you to source and you creating this ability to be able to break out and have this utter confidence that you can go in and really approach anything with this level of, I got this, like literally to the point where I've said this before, you'll cross roads and you'll look at a moving car and you will literally have the inkling concept that I could possibly put my shoulder down and stop that car. Whether that's possible or not, I don't think so, but you have this ability inside you to think that it's quite possible. And I'm not like I don't want to do ISOs because I want to run into traffic. It's not that, it's just having that ability. And then you going in and delivering a speech or a test or being evaluated by something or taking a driver's test or, you know, it's all these things in life that we go ahead and we encounter. Your ability to be able to sustain and adapt to that just raised because of the way the ISOs are kind of set up.
I know that people a lot of times think that the sun is bad because of skin cancer, but could you say why the sun is so important?
Yeah. So it's every range. There's all this light therapy and color light therapy, and it's every range comes from the sun. Like every frequency range comes from the sun. So when it comes through our eyelids or it comes through cells, it's measured matter, and it ignites cells to do their job. Like the sun drives us, just like it drives plants and drives, you know, animals and drives the ocean and drives the clouds and drive, like it's a driver of all things natural. So when we expose ourselves to it, it helps get our rhythms on board, like our circadian rhythms, when we're supposed to be tired and when we're supposed to be awake. It is the alarm clock. It's the natural alarm clock. We gather sunlight and we convert it to vitamin D, but it takes cholesterol to convert it to vitamin D. So our cholesterol levels are controlled by our liver, not by our food. So that's a very big misconception that doctors have, again, butchered. But our liver dictates how much cholesterol to convert vitamin D. Now, there's UVA and UVB rays. Certain rays cause damage to the skin and certain ones cause the healthful response that we can get inside. Damage to the skin doesn't necessarily mean something bad, because ISOs cause damage to tissue. But the body, triggered by that damage, repairs it and builds it back up again. So there's that threshold, right, where it's like controlled damage to help process. Just like eating food is an inflammatory response. Even if you eat a friggin' vegetable, the body takes energy to digest and assimilate. It's a very hard thing to do. All food creates inflammation, all of it. So when we eat, it creates a response that helps drive healing. Like, it's okay. That's what the sun does. And I know that it's been villainized, where just like a virus floating in the air, we want to avoid all viruses. Viruses trigger a growing response for us to be able to adapt to the environment. They came from this natural microbiome. They're inside us. They will trigger us to get ready for a future time. So when we look at them as something bad, it's not necessarily bad. It's a harmony that we need to work with. The sun is something that we need to work with to help us live our best lives. Now, can we overdo anything? Yeah, we can overdo everything. So there's a balance, right? It's not just go out in the sun and get 6 hours of exposure, but it might be cover up, but be out for 6 hours. You can be in the shade, or you can be under a waterfall, or you can be on a hike covered by the canopy, the tree canopy. The sun is a very, very, very healthful thing that some people during fast, even, they will eat the nutrients from the sun. And I know it sounds funny, but you'll absorb nutrient from the earth standing barefoot and the energy from the sun. Since everything's energy, food is energy, there are people that will do these very long fasts, dry, for like 20 to 40 days, dry, no water, no food. And they'll be totally fine. They'll work up to that because they're nourished by minerals coming from the earth, energy coming from the earth, and then energy coming from the sun itself. So the sun is something we need to start looking at as something that's a partner in this deal, not something that creates problem, unfortunately. That's what allopathic medicine has done.
Wasn't there some sun or light frequencies that actually cure the coronavirus?
Yeah, I guess they've said, I don't trust a lot of what's out there, but this sounds good to me. So I'm gonna make sense to me, so I'm gonna go with it. The stuff that makes sense, I'll go with. I guess when the coronavirus can only last a certain amount of time when exposed to sun, and it's like it dies if it's harmful, because the natural balance of that, the sun like eliminates it. And they've actually done like UV light inside veins. They'll expose blood paths to UV light, just like they'll expose UV light to water to disinfect the water. They can do that to blood, and they've had some success when you've talked about an overload of this virus or an overload of this expression or bacteria or whatever's going on, and the body will need to change the environment to be able to adapt to that. And bringing in UV is just bringing in sun, and there's tons of laser therapies out there, and anybody that comes peddling those things to my office wanting me to sell them or do them as treatment, I'm like, no, I just have my people go outside, which is laser treatment. The lasers just brought in one part of the sun. I'll just get the sun, the whole thing, and it's laser treatment to the max.
Before I let you go, I know you just did a fast for, I think, 72 hours. Can you maybe touch on that?
Yeah, man. So I do regularly, I've done 3-day water fast, distilled water fast. That means no food, but just water for 3 days. And then just this recently, this last year, in February, and then again in June, I did 72 hours, 3 days of no water, no food. And so my big reason I fast, I'll fast the turn of the seasons. So when spring goes to summer, summer goes to fall, fall goes to winter, winter goes to spring. That's when I fast, because I feel like it's this change and I like to give my body a break to pull back from my daily habits and just allow it to get ready for the next wave of time or of season. And the biggest reason I do it is the mental aspect to it. If you can stare food in the face when hungry and deny it, you break the chains that we have to needing food. Because right now we have this idea that I'm starved. I need food. I can't do that without eating. And it's like, that's not really true. We can go a pretty good amount of time without food, but now we have food on all corners of the highway. Every ad is either drugs or food. So now we don't know when we're hungry, when we're not, when we think we need food to when we actually do need food. When you fast like that, you start to take the reins again. You start to take control again, where it's like, wait, I got control over this. I have control over whether I'm hungry or not. Watch this. And now I can go periods of time where everyone was like, what's your diet? What's your diet? I don't have a diet. I eat when I'm hungry and I stop when I'm full and I make everything from scratch. And then it leaves me room to have the pizza every now and then, or have the root beer every now and then. And so that's the biggest component. I do love, there's an immune response to it that I've noticed, that 80% of your immune system lies in your digestive system. So if our digestive system has food constantly in it, or water or juice or whatever constantly in it, it has to take part of that energy. If we have only a certain amount of energy to go to all processes in the body, and we have food in there, there's going to be energy going to digestion. Well, if we keep food out, where's that extra energy go? And it tends to, because you're giving those immune organs the break from digesting, they can heighten. And there's times where I've gotten a cold or a flu in Chicago, or I felt like symptoms coming on, and I'll fast. Symptoms will come on hard on day two and be gone on day three. I'm not done because I had this huge immune spike, so it nailed it. I'm not finished, but it's a nice way to expedite the body's process of dealing with whatever's going on. So again, the immune response is huge. Now there's arguments with autophagy, and like the killing off or dying off of weak cells and then renewing older ones. I don't know, because I can't vouch for that, because I have no way to measure that. I just know I love the mental discipline to it, and coming off of it, I really feel like I have more control about my choices that I make and my lifestyle choices. I can't control life, but I can control kind of how I'm dancing in it, so to speak. And then whatever life throws me, I've got it. Why? How do you know? Because I've held a 5-minute lunch and I've denied food and water for 3 days.
Yeah, it's been great having you on.
Of course, man. I appreciate it. Anytime. We got tons to talk about. So whenever you need something or you want to have me back on, I'm always down.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for coming on.
Of course, man. Thanks for the opportunity.